Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Alignment Show. I'm so excited for you guys to meet this week's guest, Miss Elise. She is the founder of an organization called The Strong Movement and has her master's in positive psychology. Basically, what started as a blog in her dorm room at USC, where she was trying to help girls build their strongest body and build their strongest mind, turned into a full-on consultancy, now The Strong Movement, that helps organizations create cultures of resilience and overall well-being through research-based tools and strategies that she learned studying positive psychology. So we're going to talk all about positive psychology, what it is, how to utilize it, and her biggest mindset tips, as well as science and evidence-based ways for you to build your own confidence. Overall, this is such a great episode with so many good nuggets to help you change your mindset and ultimately your life. We also are going to chat a little bit about her experience as a pregame host for the LA Dodgers. So fun story time in there as well, but buckle up and enjoy the episode.
Welcome back to The Alignment Show,
the podcast that helps you find alignment in every area of your life.
When we live in alignment, we look and feel our best, show up as our highest selves, and live out our dreams.
Here we talk all things female health, wellness, and mindset. We are your hosts, Lexi DeYoung
and Melissa Ebling, and this is The Alignment Show. If you've been keeping up with our recent episodes, then you know how important sleep is when it comes to our overall health. Sleep contributes to so many things like our brain health, our longevity, our ability to recover and progress in our health journeys. And I want to share with you one way that I've been taking my sleep to the next level. Lately, I've been using the nightcaps from Cured Nutrition, and man, I cannot describe to you how much better I felt the following days, especially when I was having some trouble falling asleep and staying asleep a couple weeks back. The nightcaps contain full spectrum CBD and CBN to help support your body's natural sleep rhythms for a deeper, more restorative sleep state. On top of that, the nightcaps do not contain melatonin, so they don't lose effectiveness over time. And just a side note, there is THC in this product. It's less than 0.3%, but if you're worried about drug tests and that sort of thing, I would recommend opting for Zen instead, which is another sleep aid that is THC free from Cured. You can check the link in the show notes to shop and be sure to use code ALIGNMENT to save 10% on all Cured products. Now let's get back to the show.
Hello, Alignment listeners. Welcome back to another episode of The Alignment Show. We're coming at you with another guest today. And obviously, you just heard a little bit about her, but we love to have our guests introduce themselves and just share a little bit about their story and their work. Any fun facts you want to share? So with that, Elise, welcome to The Alignment Show.
Hello, hello. Thanks so much for having me. So happy to be here.
We had a Zoom call with Elise a while back, and that was like a couple months ago at this point, I feel like. So it's been a long time coming, but like Melissa said, it would be amazing if you could just like tell the listeners a little bit about what you do and like where you live, any other fun stuff.
Yeah. So, well, fun stuff. I'm born and raised in Orange County, California. So I guess fun fact, I grew up where I could see the Disneyland fireworks from my backyard. So that's how close I live.
Cool.
So long story short. Okay. So I started the Strong Movement. We're a consultancy. So we help people and organizations thrive. So we do that through keynotes, trainings, workshops, assessments, and basically helping people ultimately build the skills to thrive, to navigate challenges and stress, and to have healthy habits in their lives.
Let's talk a bit more about the Strong Movement. So we would love for you to share just like the story behind it. What, like, how'd you even come up with this idea? What made you decide to pursue it?
So long time ago, actually, like this was circa maybe 2010, 2011, when I was a student at USC, I, you know, wanted some, like a lot of women in college, I wasn't feeling my best, was self-conscious, lacked a lot of confidence, especially when it came to like my overall appearance. I have to say I got into working out for vanity reasons and not because of, you know, the positive effects that it has for your mind and body, right? And so I remember going to the gym with a friend. I had never stepped foot into a gym before. And of course, like all the other women were on the elliptical machines or like Stairmaster or even just treadmill. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll just hop on here. And, you know, it was just something about the gym that I loved. And slowly after going back, I started learning different machines from like friends and other people that I knew that I would just run into at the gym. So more like strength training type of machines, right? And like free weights. And I just started falling in love with it. And I realized at the time, and this was like, I mean, this is gonna, it's so crazy because we live in a world of like social media, but this was like pre-social media. Yeah, like Facebook existed. And that was kind of like the main thing. And I think Twitter too, but like this, no Instagram existed. So this is before everyone and their mother was like a trainer on Instagram, right? Or like posting all these fitness tips. And so I was just buying a bunch of bodybuilding magazines because that was the only place that I could find workouts and different types of exercises in them. And so oddly enough, I learned how to work out really through like my brother's fitness magazines and through these bodybuilding magazines. And I figured, you know, because like at the time, like Women's Health and Shape magazine, I don't even know if they exist anymore, but they were, it was just like a bunch of like foo-foo workouts. And I was like, oh, I kind of want something more than this. And so I figured like, you know, if guys can like build muscle in the gym, like doing these workouts, like we all have the same body parts, like minus a few, right? That like, it should work for girls too. So I really, that's how I started learning how to work out. And slowly, well, I guess not slowly, but like other friends started to like notice how I had more energy. I was more confident. I had like more pep in my step. And so they were like, what are you doing? Like, we kind of want in on this. And so I was like, well, I'm learning how to work out. I'm working out at the gym. Come with me. So I started taking my friends to the gym, but you know, the whole time we were there, like, it's not like I wasn't a trainer at that point, and I didn't know that much more, but like, I knew more than them. And so I was like helping them with form and I would train them. And then I quickly realized, hey, like, I'm going to the gym, but I'm not getting a workout in because the whole time I'm spending it like training my friends. And so that's when I decided to start this blog that I called The Strong Movement. And really, it was about sharing inspiration, fitness tips, nutrition tips. I mean, I was like cooking all of these healthy meals in my apartment, which like, I mean, what college student makes bison? I mean, I was like all in on like healthy nutrition tips to like build the ultimate type of muscle, right? And I was just like super passionate about it. And so the Strong Movement really turned into a community and a place where we wanted to inspire women to build strong bodies and strong minds. And that was the mission from the beginning. And you know, where we are now, we've evolved, obviously, as I've grown, and I've evolved personally too. But from that blog really came about the next step with the Strong Movement, which was traveling to, and I'm obviously like skipping a few years, but traveling to different sorority communities and sorority to campuses where there's sorority chapters, and working with sororities leading confidence workshops and workouts. And so it was like an extension of what I was already doing with the blog and what I was doing with my friends. And from these workshops, it was basically like, you know, when I first started them, I didn't know that this was going to turn into like what I was going to be doing full time. It was just something where at the time, so after college, I really wanted to go into sports reporting and sports broadcasting. And so I landed my dream job at the time working for the Dodgers as their game day host. And so I was a girl on the field running around with the camera, interviewing celebrities, fans, doing the pregame show, and you would see me on the Jumbotron and a lot of fun stories about that. But ultimately, I had a friend still at USC, a former roommate, and she was like, hey, you should come back and talk to sororities about your experience working for the Dodgers and how you got to where you are. And so I was like, all right, sure. Like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but I'll do it. And so basically, like, that's how it started. And so I went, I put together a talk on 10 steps on how to be strong, confident, and happy. And I was like, hey, I can lead a workout for you guys too. Cause I know like girls wanted this when I was back in school and it was like only 2 years before. So they were like, great. Yeah, let's do it. And so that was the beginning of me traveling to different sororities all across the country, leading strong girl workshops and workouts. And, you know, like when I first put it together, it was all based on my experience and obviously like things that I had read, but it got to a point where I wanted to be able to help women more and provide more like science-backed tools and tips. And yeah, what I had put together, I had no idea, but it was positive psychology. And so I came across positive psych and this program. And so I realized, you know, I wanted to go back to grad school and to school to learn more and to be able to share more to ultimately help more women across the country. So a long-winded story to share how it all started, but it's important to look back and reflect on where, you know, where you started and where you are now, because I think a lot of times like we're so forward thinking and so focused on the future a lot of times that we forget where we started and we think about, oh, how far we have yet to go, but we don't realize like we've actually come pretty far. And so of course, that's been like a span of like 10 years. This is my 10-year reunion this year from college. But it's you have to take the time to stop and reflect. So thank you for allowing me to do that.
No, that's something we even bring up with our clients a lot, because like it's a beautiful thing to always want to be better and always want to move forward and evolve. But even if you are listening to this, look back a year ago, and I guarantee that you have come so, so, so far. And that's one of my favorite things to do when I'm feeling a little down on myself. I'm like, sister, think about how far you have come. And I just think the other really cool thing that I took away from that is just how quickly everything can shift and how kind of like your purpose and what you're meant to do and what you're actually super passionate about, like A, is allowed to change over time, right? So from sports broadcasting to starting the strong movement, but also how sometimes that stuff just falls into your lap when you allow it to, right? And like are in a place to receive it. It's just crazy how one speech can turn into something so big. But I would love to hear, because I know you said you had lots of stories. Tell us like one or two from being a broadcaster for the Dodgers, because this is like a whole new world to me. I used to idolize Aaron Andrews and I wanted to be Aaron Andrews. It lasted for like a year, but I think it's so cool.
I know. I love Aaron Andrews, and she was definitely someone I looked up to when I was in that space and wanted to pursue that. So before I formally worked for the Dodgers in that capacity and in that role, I was a reporter and a host for Dodgers Nation, which it was a season before, and Dodgers Nation at the time, I don't know if it even exists now, but it was a fan site that was created by fans for fans, and it was a sister site to Lakers Nation. And so I'm trying to just think back to the stories right now, just off the top of my head, but essentially, we were able to get media passes to go to spring training. And this is my first time, like, you know, this is 2014. So I'm very fresh, very green, not really much experience. Like, yeah, I took hosting classes and reporting classes, but like actually in the field, getting the reps in, I had done some other things, but first time interviewing professional sports players. And so we get the media pass at spring training in Arizona. We go, and again, like, I guess this is also too, like, pre all of this extra security that they have. I don't know how it is now, but we have these meeting passes. They let us in and we're like, okay, like, where do we go? And they're like, well, you're going to interview people. You're going to go interview them in the clubhouse. So we walk into the clubhouse and mind you, like, again, I was just starting out. So I took my best friend and she agreed to be my camera person on this trip to record everything. And so we walk in and first of all, like everybody thinks that we like have been doing this for years, that I think to this day, they probably think that she was like, you know, a real professional camera person. And that's like our inside joke. And we quickly realized that all of the baseball players are, you know, we're in the clubhouse, are literally either naked or walking around like with a towel over them. yeah, it was pretty funny. And we realized too, that we were like the only women in the locker room, in the clubhouse at the time. And so needless to say, we got a lot of attention but we got the interviews that we wanted. So it was great.
Yeah, I'm sure anyone was very happy to talk to you.
I also didn't realize that you have to just like find someone to be your camera person. You know, that's not provided for you at that point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. When you're first starting out, I mean, you're pretty much a one woman show, one person show. So yeah, you do need someone else. But there are people that set up their own, you know, tripod and do it. And I've done it plenty of times. But for that trip, I wanted a little extra emotional support.
Dang. Yeah, I didn't know that either. But that's such a cool job to me. Also, I guess for being a sports broadcaster, the hours aren't probably too crazy. Because I know some broadcasters, it's like insane hours. Or did you just kind of like follow them on the road? Like, what did like a day in your life look like?
Yeah. So when I worked for Dodgers Nation and when I was doing stuff for them, I pretty much set my own schedule with them, I think. Because I was doing, so that was just one part of it, going to spring training and like actually being out, you know, on the field and doing stuff like that. But then the other, like after spring training and during the regular season, when I was working for Dodgers Nation, I was going into their office. And so I would set my own schedule and I'd write my own script. So this was like all studio work. So either like reporting on the latest like Dodger news that day or like what happened or on, you know, whatever else was going on with the Dodgers that week. And so mind you, again, like just starting out, that was when I had to like film myself and set up my own tripod and write my own stories and do everything myself, edit my own videos. And so I would go in the morning and I think it would take me like all day to write whatever story or whatever video I was going to record. And then I would go and film it. So again, like, and mind you, again, it wasn't like this like beautiful professional studio. I was in a closet and had to set up like my own lights and my own camera and tripod. And then for the teleprompter, again, like I thought, you know, you glamorize these jobs and you think of like how it is like on the big news sets and on the big channels and networks, but starting out, like it's not like that at all. Right. And so to set up my own teleprompter, I had to download like a teleprompter app on my iPad and then make sure that the camera was in, like I was standing in the frame of the camera. So sometimes I would film it and I didn't have a camera that like had the flip out. So I couldn't see where I was. I'd have to like run back and forth to make sure I was even like in the frame when I was setting everything up to film myself. And then with the teleprompter, I had an iPad with the app and then underneath the frame, I would use my phone to scroll the teleprompter as I was going. So that would take hours to film. And, you know, again, I was like just starting out. So lots of mistakes, lots of different things going on, not great quality. And then it would take me a couple hours to edit the video myself and then upload it for Dodgers Nation. So it was like a full day to write, record, and edit and upload like a 2-minute video. So yeah, it's, I think like you think, I obviously had no idea what it was going to entail. And I happily did it. I was super passionate about it. And I had done a little bit of that stuff on my own before for, like when I was at USC and doing, like a YouTube show that I started, but, you don't realize that. And this is like, again, before everybody was doing this. And so it was like, all these apps didn't exist, like all this extra tech that makes it easier for like your own vlogging setup, like none of that existed. So this was like all pre, you know, everybody having their own YouTube channel.
Dang. I'm always just so curious about what different career paths and stuff look like. But one, all the speaking probably helped when you were speaking at like events and stuff like that, I'm sure. And I mean, we can switch gears back to more relevant things, AKA what you are currently doing and just more about you. So I know that you mentioned like running workouts and stuff for like the schools and chapters and stuff that you were working with. And it sounds like more recently you've gotten into like the psychology side of stuff more. So what do you feel like kind of led to that transition, or when you started, was it much more like exercise based and now it's more mindset based? Like, how did you like make that change / why did you decide to make it? I'm curious.
Yeah, great question. So yeah, it was definitely all like fitness based at the beginning. I was super passionate about that. And then once I started working with chapters, you know, I realized, okay, there's a major gap. Like, we don't learn these skills in school. There's no life 101 mindset class that you learn in high school or even college. Like, if you want to learn all this, you have to seek it yourself outside of, you know, the traditional subjects that you're learning. And I was fortunate to have parents that like taught me these mindsets, that had me, you know, like fourth grade reading like Chicken Soup for the Soul while everybody else was reading Harry Potter. Like, you know, all these different business books and mindset books when I was younger were, you know, when other people my age weren't doing that. So I was exposed to it at an earlier age. And then as I was working with chapters, I realized, wow, like I just want to know more. Like, and so that became more of my passion, learning more of the psychology part. And then I didn't know that what I was teaching and what I was sharing was positive psychology. And I didn't know that there was like a whole science behind it. And so when I came across this program at the University of Pennsylvania, I was like, wow, this is my calling. Like, I have to go study this. I have to go learn this and learn the science, the research, and the evidence behind everything that I was sharing, and the theories too. So I went back to school to study applied positive psychology. And I'm really grateful for that experience and really happy that I did. And then that was really like the beginning of really understanding more like the psychology part and the mindset part. So the neck up approach. So we all know exercise helps both with physical and mental health. So this was really digging into what are things and what are practices and different strategies someone can apply in their own lives and do in their own lives to improve their overall well-being, to improve their resilience, to ultimately be happier, right? And like I put that in quotes because everybody has a different definition of happiness, right? But really when we were talking about it was like, how do we improve people's well-being? And so in positive psych, the researchers in the field and the scientists in the field, they study populations of people. And then based off of that, this sample, you can see what people are doing. The people that demonstrate high levels of well-being or high levels of resilience, what are they doing that help them get to that point? Or whether it's practices or maybe it's a mindset or a belief, what are those things that they have that help them reach these high levels of well-being? And so really as a field, we take those learnings and those findings and help other people apply those same techniques to their lives. So really positive psych is the scientific study of all of the conditions and processes that help people, individuals, groups, like sororities and institutions, like big companies or, you know, universities thrive. So really it's about helping people reach that next level in their lives.
I love that. And I love that obviously you ended up right where you're supposed to be. I'm sure you met incredible people. And I love how you explain that positive psychology looks at different populations, because I'm sure there are variance in there just inherently, and a lot of research, you know, the more the better. So I love that everything is very science-backed. I have two questions for you. So the first one would be, when it comes to psychology and mindset stuff in general, it's become very trendy for good reason. What is one misconception about psychology that you would like to address or debunk? And then my second question is going to be just in general, mindset tips for the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess the biggest thing is, oftentimes positive psychology is called the science of happiness, right? And it's very easy to kind of put that label and place it into that category. And so you'll see magazines, when you go to the market or wherever you're at, you'll see all these things like science of happiness with these emojis of happy, happy smiley face emojis or happy people. Or even when you see something about meditation, you see the traditional person sitting with their knees crossed with their hands up, meditating, that image that we think of what it should look like when people are meditating. But that is a misconception, because even though it is the science of well-being and it is about helping people be well mentally, right? It's too simplified. So what I mean by that is that I think it creates, and I think there's this new term, right? Toxic positivity, right? So it creates this idea or this image that we should always be happy all the time. And that's not what positive psychology is. Positive psychology really understands that we are humans and there's an entire human condition and there's a range of emotions, and emotions ultimately help us but we've just given them labels, negative emotions, positive emotions, but all emotions help us identify what's going on and help us to understand how we're interpreting certain situations. Sometimes it's helpful because, let's say, for example, if you're laughing at someone's funeral, that's probably not appropriate, right? You shouldn't be happy that someone has died, right? And so these emotions kind of lead us to understand what's going on, and maybe we have misinterpretations of certain situations. But if you're feeling super anxious, that's something to look into and ask yourself, okay, why am I feeling like this? And it helps you dig deeper to the thoughts and the story you're telling yourself, and also to how you're interpreting certain events in your life. So I guess to get back to your question, it sometimes is overly simplified, and it doesn't paint the full picture of what positive psychology is. Now, researchers in the field of positive psychology, yes, we understand that it's a full range, we're studying the full range of human emotions, right? But positive psychology really aims to focus on a non-clinical population. So we don't prescribe certain things. It's more descriptive on this is what people are doing. And then obviously, if you are in a clinical state or you need clinical help, that's when a clinician, a psychologist, or someone who is trained to work with different types of mental challenges and different pathologies, that would be appropriate for them. So we kind of live in a space where it's more for people that aren't needing specific types of treatment for whatever mental disorders or challenges that they're facing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that makes total sense. I think you did a wonderful job explaining that. And the toxic positivity thing, I didn't understand it for a while, but then I honestly, I just caught myself, because my toxic trait is trying to just hurry up and get through my emotions and look at the bright side every time, find the positives. And of course it's a great quality to have, but within that I was not healthily processing my emotions. So I understand that better now. And I think you did a great job of explaining it. So thank you for sharing. And then, yeah, as far as the mindset tips go, I guess just what would be your biggest tips for women in both their professional lives and their personal lives with just, being a strong woman and succeeding and excelling?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I shouldn't have actually thought about this more. I mean, it's hard to distill it down to one thing.
Share as much as you want.
But I do think based off of the research that we've done, that's something else that we do here at the Strong Movement. We do our own research and we look at other people's sample sets or data sets, and we do research and analysis from theirs as well. But based off of our research and just what we know in the literature that's out there, we know that both optimism, so developing an optimistic mindset, and confidence, so more specifically self-efficacy, are two of the most important predictors when it comes to resilience and overall well-being. So what we mean by that is, in terms of optimism, there's a lot of different definitions, right? But optimism is generally, the way we describe it, is like a belief in a better future, a more hopeful future. And there's people that, I'm not the person to go into the difference between optimism and hope. There's a lot of other people that do that, but the belief in a better future, in a more positive future, in a brighter future, is what we're talking about with optimism. And then also how you describe the events that happen to you. So do you personalize events to yourself? Do you have a more negative view, or do you, have a more positive view of the events that happen? So I know I'm not being super specific, but just bucket that into the optimism category. And then for self-efficacy, so it's your belief in your capabilities in a certain domain in your life. So yeah, general confidence is great. Like, we all need that, but we can have general confidence, but still in different domains and different areas of our lives, we might not be certain confident in those areas, right? Like, I'm not as confident, and I wasn't in school in math, but like history or reading or, all these other subjects, like, I was super confident. So it's totally normal. No one is confident in every area of their lives or in all these different domains. It's the same thing. Like, if you had a goal and you were trying to start a new hobby or try something new, you're not most likely going to be very confident in that specific endeavor, right? But the difference is it's your belief in your ability in that. So you can believe that you can get better in that specific area and that you can improve and progress and grow. So you might not start super confident, but you have to believe that you have that ability to become confident in that area, if that makes sense. So those are the two things that I would share that are super helpful, I guess, in helping people understand what are some areas that they could work on for themselves that would potentially have like the biggest bang for their buck in terms of like improving resilience and overall well-being. Then you have to distill that down into actual like rituals, practices, and strategies. But those are like the two biggest things that we know can help in those areas.
And I think that as you were describing those two things, I was just thinking of various people in my life who are very resilient or just like powerful people. And I was like, yes. And yes. And I know you said kind of breaking it down even further, and what everyone, or I should say every individual, needs to do in each of those areas is probably slightly different. But when, and I guess you can do this for both of them, but we'll start with like optimism. So for someone who maybe is not super optimistic, what are some tips that you have to create more optimism, as you step into more optimism? Because I do see that get in a lot of people's way, kind of having the, victim mentality, or like, nothing's on my side, or just viewing events and whatnot in a negative light. And that keeps a lot of people stagnant, right? So I think that if you have any tips, like one or two, that can help someone become more optimistic, I think a lot of people would benefit from that.
Yeah. Well, I think the first step in anything, right, is self-awareness. So just being, you can't change unless you become more aware of your mindset and the thoughts that are going through your mind, or even like your belief and how you see the world around you. So the first step is to become more self-aware. And how do you do that? Well, you have to slow down. You have to look back at past situations and kind of reverse engineer what happened and what you thought in those events. So I'm trying to think of like a specific example. So like you mentioned, like victim mentality, right? So I would go back to maybe something that happened where you had that victim mentality and it maybe didn't serve you in the best of ways or wasn't helpful for you. So then I would coach someone to look back at that situation and really go through the thoughts and the beliefs that went through their mind that led them to that victim mentality mindset, right? And then help them see that maybe there would be other helpful ways of looking at the situation in the future when they're in a similar situation that would help them and serve them better and certainly align with their goals of how the outcome that they want versus taking on the mindset that everybody's out to get them, right? So I think it's specific to the situation, but really like if there's, I guess, like a quote unquote cookie cutter formula is really going back through past events to really understand like what happened there so that then you can start to notice more in future events when those thought patterns and when that mentality is coming back. So it does take work. I think people think like, oh, I'm going to try it for a day and, you know, and then I'm going to become optimistic. I mean, this is all stuff that you have to work on day in and day out. And just because I'm sharing these tips doesn't mean that I, you know, am perfect at all of this. This is all, you know, just like how they say like yoga practice, right? Or like law practice or dental practice. This is all a practice. This is all a journey. It's not, you know, a one-time thing. Like we're all on this journey and it's a journey. It's a life journey of practicing these different skills and getting better at them. So that for the optimism side is that, but it's really the same for the resilience side too. And for the confidence side, really understanding how your interpretation of events affects your and influences your thought pattern, your reactions, your physical emotions, and how you respond. And I think once you start to understand that, it can really be a game changer for you and how you respond to future stressful situations or challenges. And part of that is really like this whole self-awareness piece is slowing down. And if we're constantly on the go, if we're constantly super busy or distracting ourselves with social media or technology or constantly on our phone scrolling and not paying attention. And sometimes that's like, you know, a coping mechanism, right? Like you don't want to pay attention to your thoughts, but all of that is super distracting and we need to spend time in solitude and we need to spend time in a reflective state to really understand what's going on to then improve and progress and get better.
Yeah. I think you said something super important that I try to call my clients out on this all the time. And that a lot of times we don't want to sit with our thoughts. And so we've come up with different methods of distracting ourselves. And that's something both Melissa and I really had to work through and really had to work on stepping back and reflecting. And it's so freaking uncomfortable. Like the work is hard. But yeah, whether it's social media, which is so common now, or, you know, for some people it manifests in the relationship with food or like working out all the time or using different substances or just being super, super social. Like it can manifest in so, so many different ways. But I think that that's like a very, very important point that you may be like, I'm fine. But this like lack of optimism or lack of self-efficacy is going to keep manifesting if you don't step back and observe yourself and slow down and sit with the uncomfortable thoughts or look at the behaviors that you are doing, having, whatever, so that you can change them, right? So I thought that was a really good point that very much hit home for me because I am the queen of distracting myself. I will say that.
Yeah. And even, I mean, I notice this with myself all the time, whether it's when I wake up and just grabbing my phone first thing in the morning and then realizing like an hour has gone by and I've done nothing. And the day has like, it's, you know, it's already started, it's kickstarted. And I'm in this like negative, weird state starting my day because I just spent it like scrolling or looking at email or just doing stuff that's not productive or helpful as a great, like fresh start to my day. Same thing. Like when you stand in line somewhere, like the first reaction is to just like scroll on your phone and like we used to live in a time where we didn't have phones. Like, we're old enough to remember that. And I think back, like, wow, you used to just stand in line and you would like observe people, like you mentioned, like observing yourself, right? You would observe other people, you would observe the situation, you'd actually be in tune to what's going on around you and not in your own bubble, in your own world. And maybe you would even have a conversation with someone else or like make a friend. And like, I mean, it sounds so foreign now, but I miss that. And so that's something that I try to remind myself of, is especially in our world where it might be in certain areas like a little bit more dangerous these days, like you kind of need to be aware of your surroundings and not stuck in your screen or on your phone. So that's something I try to remind myself. But really, like, also too, there's this whole, and I'm not going to get into it, but I know that there's like research on just like field of vision. So if you're constantly looking at a little screen, that like focuses you in more, and that could be great if you're like trying to focus in on something, but like you need change in depths of field throughout the day.
Yeah,
makes sense. And I'm glad that you hammered that home, because Lexi and I have talked about that so many times, and it makes me sad when people are just so like in their phone. And I get it, like it's almost uncomfortable to be the one who's not looking at your phone, especially if you're like in a public place. But sometimes I will challenge myself. I don't know why this came to my head, but I always do it when I'm standing in line at Kava. I'm like, no, you cannot be on your phone in here. And I just observe people, and like, they don't know I'm looking at them because they're on their phone. So it's just funny you brought that up. But kind of circling back, I know you're talking about strategies with like the mindset stuff. I have a question about confidence. I would love to hear your take on the theory of like fake it till you make it. I would love to hear a psych professional's opinion on that.
Yeah. Super interesting. So that actually used to be like one of the things that I would like teach in my steps, right? And then actually, you know, looking at the research and kind of looking to see like, does that actually hold true? Well, two things. First, I remember, and I can't remember if it was my graduation or it was like a graduation speech that I watched at Penn, but one of my professors, Angela Duckworth, she wrote a book called Grit.
That's such a good book.
I know. I love her. She's amazing. She's awesome and super down to earth. And I just loved her class, loved her. And in her speech for this graduation, she was talking about how we're all just figuring it out. Like, you know, like even though someone's older than you, or maybe they're an expert in a certain field, like they're still figuring things out. Like no one has life down perfectly, right? So that reminded me, your question reminded me of her speech. And secondly, one of the biggest, pathways to building self-efficacy based off of the research by Albert Bandura, who is the psychologist that studied self-efficacy and wrote a lot of articles on it. We know that mastery experiences are one of the biggest things that lead to confidence in certain areas. And so mastery experiences mean literally just doing it. And so there's no way around it. Like you can read a book on how to learn how to ride a bicycle, but it's not until you actually ride the bicycle that you learn how to ride a bicycle. Like you can have all of this knowledge about it and that's all great and dandy, but you don't have the actual physical experience. And it's not until you do that you actually get better at it. And until you like fall off the bike and get back on and keep like progressing and learning and growing from there. So it's the same thing with any other area of your life. Like you have to just do it to get confident at it. And a lot of times the feeling of confidence doesn't come until afterwards. So if you wait to feel confident about something, you're going to be waiting a long time. It's scary because you're jumping into an uncomfortable situation or into an unknown, but you have to just go for it and jump in and literally just do it to build confidence. So there's no way around it.
That was something, I don't know when it hit home for me, but I know for so long, I was very insecure. I feel like a lot of women are. And I was like, there's all these things I want to do, but I have to wait till I feel ready and I have to wait till I'm confident. And
someone, and I wish I could remember who, so I could give them credit, but they were like, you're only going to get unscared when you do it. You're only going to feel confident and build confidence when you show up for yourself, even when it's scary and even when it's not convenient, and when you do the things that are not, do not come easily to you. Cause that's just been like my biggest thing, is I need to be good at things. So I think that's a really, really good point. And now, like, one of my favorite lines that I literally tell myself this like 25 times a day is like, just do it anyways. Cause I feel like a lot of people see people like yourself, see people like Melissa, myself, and they're like, oh, they do all these things and show up how they do because they're confident. And I am very confident now, but it's because I know I'm going to show up and figure things out and do things even when they are scary, right? It's not necessarily being confident in every area, but it's like a trickle effect, right? You're like, I did all these hard things. It worked out, so I can keep doing them, you know?
But. And those reminders and self-doubt, a little bit of self-doubt is normal and actually helpful. If not, like, you know, you'd be jumping off like a cliff thinking that you're going to survive. Right. So like a little self-doubt is your brain telling you like, hey, we're stepping out of our comfort zone. Like, it's going to be a little scary. It's when it's like becomes very critical or overwhelming that it holds you back and paralyzes you, where it's, you know, becomes unhelpful and it doesn't serve you in the right way.
Yeah. Melissa and I had like a personal development coach for a long time. And I think one of the biggest takeaways we both had was like, let your fear guide you. If there is a little bit of self-doubt that is leading you right towards growth. And I think continuing to go in that direction is what builds confidence. Kind of like, if I look back and I didn't do the stuff that I doubted myself about, or the stuff that was scary, I would still be where I was a few years ago, you know? So I think that's a really
beginner. Sorry, not to interrupt you. Everyone starts a beginner, and you wouldn't be where you are if you hadn't taken those steps and like jumped into that fear.
Yeah. So everyone listening, there's something that you want to do that's a little scary. Go do it. Go do it. Build that self-efficacy. But Melissa, do you have any other questions before we go for the grand finale and our favorite?
I think we're going to go for the grand finale. We're going to start wrapping it up here, and we're going to ask you something that we ask every guest. And that is, what does alignment mean to you?
Ooh, okay. I love that question. So I haven't thought about this, and this is just me off the top of my head. I think
the best
alignment is being true to who I am, to my values, to what I believe. And I think for me, I'm in a stage right now in my life where that's evolving too, where I'm growing, and where things that used to excite me, or that I used to place a lot of value on, maybe don't excite me as much anymore. So really being true to what you believe in, standing up for yourself, standing up for what your values and the things that you believe in when you see that they're not, when there's like an injustice, and having that faith in yourself and that confidence in yourself to accomplish your dreams and your goals. And I think like more specifically, I'm most aligned when I am sleeping well, when I'm eating well, when I'm moving, when I'm doing all these things that we talked about, when I feel mentally clear, right? But also the spiritual component of that is when I have a relationship with God and when I'm following what his will is for me. And I know, like, you know, we live in a society where we were told once, at least growing up, like, don't talk about religion or politics, but we live in a world that is very devoid of God right now. And we idolize a lot of things in our society. And I think once you find that grounding and your North Star in God, I think alignment comes a lot easier. And I can't believe I'm even saying this, because if you would have asked me 5 years ago, I probably would have never said this, but I've had a lot of different experiences, maybe another podcast supernatural experiences that have led me back to God. And I think this year I have felt more at peace than I ever have.
I have chills.
I know, same. I'm like, I really want to keep going now, but another podcast. And that was so beautifully said and such an amazing way to wrap up this episode. And last thing, where can people find you? So website, social media, all the things.
Yeah. So social media, Instagram, The Strong Movement. You can find me there. We're just getting back into social media. So I did take a huge social media break, but we're slowly getting back on. And honestly, that break was amazing. It was during the pandemic and it was awesome. So Instagram there, and then website is thestrongmovement.com. We're actually going through a major remodel. So in the next few months and by the new year, it'll be a whole new look, which I'm super excited about because, like I mentioned before, we're evolving and that's a good thing. You need to evolve. You need to grow. So I'm really excited for this next phase.
As always, everything will be in the show notes. So make sure to check her out. And thank you so much for joining us. It was such a cool, fun, and like very different episode. So appreciate you.
Yeah, this was so fun. Yeah, I'm super excited for part two, where we'll just keep it going.
I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I know Melissa and myself enjoyed sitting down and chatting with Elise. Selfishly, we always learn so much from our guests, and I know I learned so many little things that I can apply to my own life. So I'm really, really excited about that. And I hope you guys are as well. Just a reminder to screenshot and share this episode on your story if you found it helpful, because that means others probably will as well. So share the love. We want to get our guests out there. And also, if you guys want to give us a 5-star review, or I should say are willing to, it does help us out a lot. And our goal is to build this podcast and reach and help as many individuals as we can. So that helps us do that. Always feel free to shoot us a DM on Instagram or an email and let us know if there are any specific guests you would like us to reach out to or topics that you would like us to cover. Because as I have reiterated many times, we want to support you guys in the ways that you want to be supported. So with that, thank you for listening, and we will catch up with you next week.